Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the meditation class. It's very nice to see so many of you taking the time to come and share in this time. And usually at the beginning of the class, I give a few instructions or a few words about meditation. And today I'd like to talk around the topic of the four Brahma Viharas, which was the topic that I talked about on Friday night. And these four Brahma Viharas, the Buddha mentions very often as one of the pathways into the jhanas, or the deep absorptions. And these Brahma Viharas are also ways of preparing the mind for insight practice. These four Brahma Viharas are the cultivation of positive emotions, four positive emotions, which have as their characteristic that they are opening up the heart and cutting away at self-centered preoccupation with what we would like for ourselves, first of all, before we think about what other people need, or the sense of isolation that comes with feeling like we're the only one who knows or has this kind of experience in life, that that makes us the most important person or being in our world. And obviously with the view of self that underlies our approach to life, we do have that idea of ourselves being the most important and at the centre of everything. And we usually come first in our thoughts about what we should be doing or how life should be. So these Brahma Viharas are a way of breaking down the barriers, taking the spotlight off ourselves, expanding our horizons to see the universal nature of our hopes and fears. And by breaking down the barrier of that sense of separateness and isolation, to bring us into a closer experience of ourselves as being nothing special, but part of a much bigger picture. Hard to put it into words, just being part of a process, a participant in a flow of things which we call life, rather than as something that is solid, continuing, unchanging, exists independently from all other people or phenomena. And this, of course, is helping us to come closer to an experience of the three characteristics of existence, of impermanence, everything changing, nothing having a solid core, but being created out of causes and conditions, the teaching on non-self, and also to recognize the inherent unsatisfactoriness or dukkha in life, because things don't conform to our wishes and our hopes, and that things, even if they are temporarily the way we would like them to be, they're constantly changing into something else. And through developing the Brahma Viharas, we recognize and experience that it's like that for everyone, not just for us. So it changes our perspective on things. It widens our horizons and it strengthens our heart, makes the heart stronger, more open, more resilient, more buoyant, brighter. all of those qualities which are just words, approximations, pointing towards the actual experience of feeling like that and addressing life in this way. So the deliberate and systematic cultivation of these Brahma Viharas, or these boundless states, is a way of, again, preparing the mind for approaching life in a more open and fresh way than we usually do through our conditioned and preoccupied point of view, our self-centered point of view. So these four Brahma Viharas are loving kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, mudita, joy in the happiness of others, and upekkha, equanimity. And traditionally it's taught that the foundation for all of them is metta, or loving kindness. And this loving kindness is a wish for all beings to be happy, to be safe, to be free of ill health or conditions that create unhappiness for them. It's a feeling of friendship, a feeling of warmth, which when extended further and further afield, allows us to develop this universal goodwill. And the characteristic of loving kindness is that it is given regardless of the object that we're giving it to. It's not based on the person who receives it being worthwhile or being lovable or being someone that we even like, but we are able to extend our loving kindness unconditionally, regardless of the qualities of the recipient. We extend our loving kindness because our heart is full of loving kindness, contains loving kindness, and it's just a spontaneous reaction or response to that person. So this quality of it being unconditioned is very important, that we're no longer judging things according to whether we like them or they suit us, whether they help us and support us. And this is actually very crucial for being able to open up the mind in meditation to develop insight. Because so often what prevents us from seeing things as they are and seeing them freshly and clearly is because we have a vested interest in wanting them to be the way that we think they should be or the way we'd like them to be. Or we cut them off because they don't suit us. It isn't what we want to see. And because we have this conditioned approach to things, we judge things, we prejudge them, we put a label on them before we've actually seen them freshly or in their naked presentation. So the development of this unconditional goodwill allows us to start to approach things with that freshness, without projecting onto them whether they're good or bad, they suit us or not, we like them or not, and therefore we pay attention to them or we ignore them or we have a prejudiced view of them. So this unconditional aspect of the Brahma Viharas, where we're not judging something as worthy or not dependent on the object, we are giving loving kindness or compassion because we have that in our heart. This is one of the key aspects of these Brahma Viharas, which support the development of the mind in meditation and the capacity to open with insight to our experience, to reality. Very often people think that the development of the Brahma Viharas is something which is only done in the beginning. It's sort of like a preliminary, it's an easy thing to do. It's not really crucial to the practice. But I would like to encourage you to see that it's actually an integral part of the cultivation of the path and the development of the mind. Without a mind which is happy, which is buoyant, which is bright, which is energized, we can't investigate reality and give rise to insight. So we use these Brahma Viharas not only to make us happier and help us to get on better in our relationships and our everyday life, but they are really important for helping to prepare the mind for meditation. So now we're going to sit in meditation. So please establish your sitting posture. And we can introduce loving kindness into our meditation right from the beginning by the way that we attend to the body to settle it into the meditation. When we attend to the body with loving kindness, we're trying to support the body and in turn allow the body to support the mind. By relaxing the body, finding those places which are tight or tense, making the body as comfortable as possible, with a tender, gentle, caring attitude. So moving the attention through the body, tenderly relaxing, taking time to ease into the present moment of the meditation. If you find any place in the body that's particularly aching or tight or tense, take the opportunity to put your full attention on that part of the body. Caress it with the mind, relax it, and offer it loving kindness. Once you've settled into the posture and you're ready to take up the breath as your meditation object, you can apply loving kindness to the breath. Investing the breath with qualities, first of all, that make it attractive to the mind, so that the mind will stay focused on the breath, but also so that the mind starts to open up that it's not a matter of forcing the mind to stay with the breath or to stay with this present moment. So as you take the breath in, you can reflect that this breath is vital for the continuation of life. Without the next breath in, there is no more life. Next breath in is more important than what you're going to do tonight, because you won't be doing that tonight unless you get the next breath in. Or anything else that may be preoccupying the mind. None of it is as vital to your continued existence as the next breath in. having recognized the importance of the breath, now you can start to appreciate the breath, seeing it as a good friend, closer to you than your closest relative. Given to you freely from the time you were born and with you until the time you die. Generating a feeling of appreciation and goodwill towards the breath. Use loving kindness, soft and gentle touch to bring the mind back to the breath. When the attention comes back to the breath, allow it to rest with the breath as though you were meeting an old friend. An old friend that you're very comfortable with, that you're pleased to see, happy to spend time with. Establish your attention in the present moment. Be aware of the object that you're observing. Also become aware of the mood or the state or the quality of the mind that is observing the object. Whether the mind is bright and energetic, light and expanded, noticing the quality in the mind. Mind observing the mind. Last part of the meditation, I'm going to lead you in some loving kindness practice so that you can not only get a sense of what this practice is, but observe the quality of your own mind as you do this practice. So as you focus your attention in on yourself, the quality in the mind, what the present moment contains, how it feels, repeat the phrase to yourself, "May I be well, happy and peaceful." May I be well, happy and peaceful. Be well, happy and peaceful. Continue repeating the phrase to yourself, observing the quality in the mind and the feeling tone. May I be well, happy and peaceful. Being aware of any contradictory phrases that arise in the mind, any obstructions or judgments or criticisms, treating them with loving kindness, just allowing them to arise and pass away, and continuing to repeat to yourself, "May I be well, happy and peaceful." We continue to repeat the phrases to ourselves until there's a feeling behind it that matches those sentiments. May I be well, happy and peaceful. Once we have those feelings established, or sometimes if it's difficult for us to feel that genuinely towards ourselves, we can help to expand the mind, to soften the mind, by bringing into the mind the thought of someone that we can easily make those wishes for and generate that feeling, that warmth. For someone who's a teacher, a mentor, a helper, perhaps a neighbour, a friend, a work colleague, someone that we can easily generate feelings of goodwill towards, feelings of warmth. We bring that person to mind, perhaps visualize their face, repeat their name, and wish for them. May they be well, happy, and peaceful. And you can switch back and forth between yourself, wishing yourself, may you be well, happy and peaceful, and that person that you can easily have those feelings towards. Moving back and forth so that you generate the feeling that goes with those wishes, those words. It's difficult for you to wish that for yourself. You can also remind yourself that your mentor or friend, the person you can easily have those feelings towards, would wish that for you. Whatever you're wishing for them, they would wish that for you. These are props or cues or stepping stones to help us to approach this feeling of loving kindness, goodwill towards ourselves. Making the wish for yourself just as this person would wish for you. May I be well, happy and peaceful. May they be well, happy and peaceful. Nature of these Brahma Viharas, that there's a feeling of expansion, in the mind and in the heart, even a feeling of expansion in the body. And so as we develop this practice, we expand our loving feelings outwards further to include the people who are our family and friends. May they be well, happy and peaceful. Other people who share our lives, who aren't so close, as our family and friends, perhaps our neighbours, our work colleagues, people we see in the course of our life on a regular basis. And then beyond the circle of the people that we actually know, gradually expanding the categories, the groups, further and further afield, to include all beings everywhere. So now for the last part of the meditation, wish for all beings everywhere, human and non-human, known and unknown, far and wide. May all beings everywhere be well, happy and peaceful. Gently bring your attention back to yourself. And once more, wishing for yourself unconditionally, may I be well, happy and peaceful. Spreading that loving feeling from the top of the head to the tips of the toes throughout the whole physical body. Feel yourself so filled with loving kindness, surrounded by loving kindness. Taking a few moments just to become aware of the effect of the meditation. Allowing that feeling to remain with you as we come to the end of the meditation. Any questions or comments? So if you're cultivating loving kindness practice in your meditation, you would stay with wishing yourself your good wishes until you can generate a feeling that goes with the words, because what we're trying to come to is a feeling, what's closer to an emotion. Not just to say the words, but to feel it and to mean it. But if you find that it's very difficult for you to generate the feeling towards yourself, then you would move to that person that you can easily have those feelings towards. And you would use the development of loving kindness towards that person as your platform, if you like, for coming back to yourself. And then gradually extend outwards from there. And it may take you weeks, even longer, to get to that point with those two categories. But that's part of the way things are, and you just practice with patience. Also, the words that you use, you may choose some other sort of wish which you know would be helpful for yourself. You can connect with those words better, or the wish for someone else, that person, connecting with words that you know are relevant for their situation. So you have to be inventive and use what works for you. That's right. No, that's right. In the suttas you'll see that the Buddha says, I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. I will abide pervading the second quarter, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. And then he goes all around and above and below and to everyone as to myself. And I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness. So there isn't a specific being or beings or categories. It's to all, everything, everywhere. And that can be helpful because you don't have to, any sort of sense of, oh, I don't like that category, or I couldn't give it to those people. So it makes it easier for some people. And if that's what's helpful, then use that. But generally speaking, we find it easier if we have something concrete, but that's where individual differences come up, and so you have to see what works for you. I've got the sun coming in straight on my face from one of the windscreens, so I can't... Yeah, I'm twinkling. Good. That's loving kindness. Yeah, so it's true in the original teachings, the Buddha's just giving in various directions, and for the loving kindness, compassion, happiness in the happiness of others, and equanimity. So you find what works for you. It can be very helpful to learn some of the chants in Pali or in English and just repeat the chants and use that as an approach to trying to generate the feeling. Part of what we're doing as we practice trying to generate the feeling is to hear what we say to ourselves about, no, that's not right, or you can't do that, or those people don't deserve it, or whatever. So when you have the different categories, it's actually a way of developing some understanding of the barriers that exist in the heart. Yes. 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 That is actually a very important point, that loving kindness or any of the Brahma Viharas isn't at the expense of ourselves for others. It's to all as to myself. So we might think that we think ourselves most important and we're going to make that the focus. But on the other hand, we can sometimes think, well, we should be altruistic and always think of others before ourselves. So the wording in the original teaching was to all as to myself. The other thing to understand, it can just also help us to see that this is a relative teaching. We're talking in terms of categories of beings, and in the ultimate sense, there are no beings. There's just a process happening. Temporarily, beings coming together with causes and conditions. What in the Buddha's teaching of the five khandhas, the mind and the body. So this is a relative teaching because we're talking in categories of beings, self and others. But ultimately, as we break down the barriers more and more, we come to the not only the understanding but the acceptance that it doesn't floor us, it doesn't overwhelm us, that we are just part of a flux and flow, a process. We're just participating in something that's much bigger than any of us as individuals. It is pretty much the same process. It's difficult to get to equanimity until you have that capacity to see others as yourself, because the basis of equanimity is that you start to see the similarity, that it's like for me as it is for them, or like for them as it is for me. And so what's happening to the special ones in my life, or what's happening to me, is no different from how it affects other people. So there's that even-mindedness then. There's not a sense of selecting out the special ones. But the other aspect of equanimity is to be able to see how cause and effect works. And if we've got a strong attachment to a particular person and an outcome for them in their life, then we lose the balance of our mind because we're trying to manipulate conditions to produce the result that we think that they should have or that we want them to have. And the ability to stand back and observe the reality of cause and effect, or karma unfolding, karma and karma vipaka unfolding, is very difficult. And so we are making the mind not only able to feel about others as we do for ourselves or our dear ones, but to have the strength of mind to hold the suffering that goes with seeing what happens to our dear ones that we don't like happening to them. And so really we have to work up to equanimity. Equanimity can't just arise until we have that capacity to see with more detachment, view with more detachment. They are. The question is whether the other three will come as a byproduct of loving kindness. They will, but it's also possible to cultivate them directly, especially compassion. Sometimes compassion is more approachable for people who can really feel their heart bend or break at the suffering of others, in particular categories of suffering, categories of being who they see suffering. They can get in touch with that emotion much more easily than just that seems a bland feeling of goodwill or love. If they equate that metta with so much of a strong emotion, and they can't catch that, but they can feel the grip on the heart when they see suffering. And so it can be more useful to approach to start with compassion for some people, to actually bring into mind a suffering person that they care about, or that they've even just heard about in the course of their life or seen in the newspapers or something, and start to generate, be in touch with that feeling of wishing that person should be free of suffering, and getting in touch with that feeling and develop that. And that helps to get it, start to open the heart to the other emotions, the other Brahma Viharas. Compassion is more frightening for some people because you have to actually touch pain. You have to be willing to feel pain in order to open up to the wish that that being or oneself should be free of pain. So for some people that's too challenging. So we have to find our own way in. The other way in which compassion can be very useful is, especially if we're trying to establish good relationships with someone that's difficult, and we can't have loving kindness towards them, we can use compassion as a way to see that we're both suffering. The person who is causing us affliction is also suffering because they're acting out of ignorance and creating all sorts of negative consequences for themselves, even just in our relationship. And to see how caught we are in our ignorance can generate a feeling or allow a feeling of compassion to arise when we see just how stuck we are. And that compassion can actually lead on to a feeling of wishing that person well, regardless of the actual suffering they're in now. But may they be well and happy, because if they were well and happy, they wouldn't be producing so much suffering for themselves and others. And so compassion can actually lead us on to loving kindness. And with mudita, which is happiness in the success of others, once we start to approach that Brahma Vihara, it very often puts us in touch with the feeling of jealousy or envy, or a feeling that says, you know, they have so much and it's not fair that they have so much, they have more than they need. If they have that much, then there won't be enough for other people. Or I won't be able to have my fair share. And so practicing mudita can actually show us where we feel that we're lacking, or that there's a sort of poverty mentality, that this person's got what I haven't got. And it's actually said that to develop mudita is more difficult than any of the other Brahma Viharas, because it does really highlight our sense of missing out or vulnerability much more than the others. But it's based on a feeling of goodwill towards ourselves and goodwill towards others, because if we're jealous about what others have, it means that we don't like them. If it's someone that we like that has all that stuff, we think, oh, that's great, we might get a share, we might somehow benefit, or even if it's not directly ours. But if it's someone that we don't like, and someone that we feel is quite separate from us, then we don't see any way that their good fortune will flow onto us. Yes, that's actually how you find compassion, is to be willing to go into your own pain and feel the suffering of that, so that you can stand next to someone who's suffering without being put off or overwhelmed or frightened by that experience of pain. So that's really the way into deepest compassion, is to touch our own pain. And that's how we can stand beside someone else who's suffering a pain which the circumstances of which we may have no direct experience of, but we know what it feels like to be afraid, or we know what it feels like to feel humiliated, or we know what it feels like to have lost something that's dear to us, because we've touched that in ourselves. Yes, That's exactly it. So the comment was that it's observing your own reaction and being able to be with that rather than being preoccupied with how you think the other person is feeling. Or sometimes should be feeling when we're trying to help someone. And that's why these practices can be quite confronting, because we're afraid of pain. We spend so much of our life trying to avoid pain, physical pain, emotional pain. And to really touch compassion, we have to be willing to touch our own pain and know what it's like. And it may not be exactly the same situation as someone else's circumstances, but we know what pain feels like. We know how scary it is. And it can be something quite minor, like last night a young boy was talking to me about how it's scary at his new school because he keeps getting lost and can't find his classroom and gets into trouble for being late. And you can say, well, you should, you know, write it down or pay attention, or, you know, surely you've been there a few weeks and you... But, you know, you feel the scariness of just being lost and not knowing which way to go. And then it becomes much easier to understand how it's hard for him to find his way around, even if he's been there before, because when he gets into the panic of not finding it, it doesn't matter whether he's been there before, he can't remember where it is. And you know what it's like when you get into that situation. You've done it before, you've been there, you should know what it's like, but now you're driving on the freeway or driving trying to find some place and you get lost, and you know all you've got to do is stop and pull over somewhere and look in your map or go around the block and come back again. But the panic takes over and you try to switch lanes and you try and cut across traffic, or you know, that's what it's like. And so to experience that and go there, you can feel the panic and then you can, you know, yeah, it's scary when you're in that situation rather than judgment of that person at that time. And that's just a very simple thing, not to speak of all the other things that frighten us and overwhelm us. Well, this is the usual dilemma. There's looking at something on television and having, first of all, an overwhelming feeling for the suffering of others, so that you really want to shut off from that. And even if it feels overwhelming when you're watching it on television, when you sit down to meditate, somehow it's not easy to find that feeling again and use it. And then the other thing is that you get angry with the people who are causing that suffering, so your compassion is overwhelmed with aversion for the other people. So you're seeing where we're starting from. That's our baseline, basically, that we are unable to open our hearts fully, even to people who are suffering, because we feel it very strongly when it's right in front of us, but then we forget about it and it's hard to pick it up. So, and also, we don't see the suffering of the people who are inflicting the harm. And part of what we're trying to come to is the realisation that people wouldn't be inflicting harm if they weren't suffering. there's some sense in which those people who are inflicting harm, however horrible they are in our eyes, and the things that they're doing are terrible, wouldn't be doing that if they felt happy and peaceful, felt that they had enough of whatever it is they need. So it makes sense to wish that they may be happy so that they won't do that kind of thing. But we have to start where we are, and sometimes if we can just work with the emotions that we can, it can be useful to actually bring to mind a particular scenario that we've seen on television or that we've read about, and use that in our meditation to not run away from it, which is what we do. That's how we survive. We are affronted by it when we see it. It makes an impact, but it's too hard, so we try to get rid of it. We change channels or we distract ourselves. So in the meditation, we contact that directly by bringing it up into our mind. And we might find that it's overwhelming at first, but we just get brave enough to look at it. And then to see how our own reaction to it is our suffering. And so we can generate compassion to our fear in that moment that we don't want to look at that terrible situation, to our wanting to just turn it off, to run away from it, to forget it. And we can have compassion to our own inability to be with suffering at that time. We would like to be, but we can't be. And so there we have it on the spot. A subject for compassion that is our own unwillingness to be with pain or our own ability to stay with that pain. So we don't need to have the other person's pain, we have our own pain. And then as we work with that, we can bring that other person into the feeling that we have for ourselves. This is how hard it is, even when we're not being tortured or starved or whatever, just to be with the unsatisfactoriness of life. And so we start to build the strength of the heart, which allows us to go out and are open to that other person's suffering. And the other thing that I guess we're hoping is that by opening to the suffering, that we won't just stop there. We will look for ways in which we can be do something positive to alleviate suffering. So we might think, I'll sign that petition, or I'll give a donation to the people who are at the forefront doing that, or I'll see what I can do to make a difference in my own community. So when we get these qualities of loving kindness and compassion going, and even when we get the feeling of mudita, seeing how a little bit of help can mean so much to some people, and we can delight in the difference that it makes, then we can be energized to actually do something practical. And as we get more involved in doing something practical, we get stronger in being able to deal with those various ups and downs or difficulties, and we connect with other people who are doing the same things, and we find some comfort in that connection, ability to do more than we can do just on our own. Yes. Yes. Well, often when you look at people who are hurting others, you can find in their own life history that they've been hurt, or in the history of the group that they belong to, and so they've been conditioned to that way of trying to protect themselves. And that's the where you can start to have some compassion for them in their suffering because they're perpetuating their suffering, but also to put out good will into the world. Positive feelings is much better than putting out more hatred and more ill will. So the little bit that we do, it is not making things worse, and it definitely will make things better. So one of the reasons for talking about the Brahma-viharas is just to emphasise how integral they are to the development of the path. They're not something that we just do as a side issue. They are really central to the work we need to do. Because without a bright and open mind, we won't be able to continue to practice both meditation and daily life, but also we won't be able to see things in a new way. Now, and just to start to talk about suffering and how it comes about in the world and how we approach it when it comes into our life, we start to maybe see things in a slightly different way than we did before. So even just to start to approach these topics puts a little bit more light into our own mind. One of the things that we can also do for spreading goodwill, even if we're not doing loving kindness practice every day, is whenever we do whatever kind of meditation practice or any acts of goodness, however small, is to dedicate the merit of what we've done to all beings everywhere, to the well-being of all beings everywhere, without discrimination between the ones that we like and the ones we don't, the ones we know and the ones we don't know. So that's also a way of every day connecting with all beings everywhere and the wish that all beings everywhere have to be safe and happy and peaceful. So that's something perhaps you might think about adding to your practice. And now I'm just going to chant a blessing, which we chant at the monastery. And this is the sort of thing that you can learn for yourself and that you can do at home, on the bus, wherever you are, just to connect yourself with your aspiration for peace and happiness, and that the aspiration all beings have to live peacefully and happily. May the merits made by me, now or at some other time, be shared among all beings here, infinite, immeasurable, by rejoicing in this cause, this gift of merits given by me. May beings all forever live a happy life, be free from hate, and may they find the path secure, and their good wishes all succeed. So now all you have to do is say sadhu, 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 and it's all shared.